Once more into the breach, dear friends. Else close the wall up with our English dead. Good morning again, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Should there be boys and girls listening, you are either adventuresome souls, or you are in some other way unusual, because this is an economic show. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. This is Jake McClure, and hopefully Jeff McClure is on the line. I'm hopeful that I am Jake McClure, and I have about a 99% certainty of that fact, but you never can tell. So, Jeff McClure, the Elder Baldy, is this you on the line?
This is not you. This is me.
All right.
So, how do I sound?
You sound alive.
Good.
How do I sound?
I sounded muted historically when I tried to go on the air with the previous headphone, so I was wondering how this worked.
This sounds good. You do sound a little bit like a remote baseball operator. We can hear a little bit of the scruff sound of your voice on the microphone, but I couldn't hear that on the phone. So it's
okay,
just because I'm in my nice, extra tidy headset. I don't know that anybody listening to normal AM would care.
This is not normal AM.
No. This is not normal.
Have you disclosed?
I have not. I've just said that this is the Personal Wealth Coach. Would you like to take the disclosure, sir?
Well, this is the Personal Wealth Coach, and it is a radio program, and you may have already figured that out, unless, of course, you're listening on the Internet, in which case it may or may not be a radio program. It's an Internet program, but at any rate.
If you're using it on your Wi-Fi, though, it's still a radio program, and so is the rest of the Internet.
You're right about that. It's all radio. But it's also the name of a SEC-registered investment advisory firm based in Salado, Texas. And when we say SEC-registered, that means we're registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which doesn't say anything about whether they approve or disapprove of us, but it does say that we have more than $100 million under management, so we're technically large.
They don't say whether they disapprove of us until they do.
Right.
Right.
They would never say they approved of us,
but at any
point. They don't approve of anything.
They're good regulators in that respect. I mean, the FBI should not be coming out and saying, you are an upstanding citizen. They should only come out when they think you've done something wrong. And I think that is the case with the SEC as well.
Well, I think occasionally for their agents, when they retire, they say they're upstanding citizens.
Oh, that's true. That's true. I mean, they can give themselves.
Cool.
That's what
anyway.
Yes.
The SEC neither approves or disapproves of it, but we're technically large, which I think is fascinating.
We're very small for a large.
Yes, but we are registered with the SEC, and we give investment advice through our firm, but we're not giving investment advice on the radio because we'd have to know you personally, and it would have to be private, and if we gave it in public, we'd violate all kinds of rules and regulations. So what we give is educational information.
On the radio.
Or occasionally we do give advice, but it's very generalized advice. But we don't give investment advice on the radio. And let's see, what else? The information we provide
is deemed.
On this education The education we provide on this radio program is from sources we deem to be reliable.
Yes.
How you like that? But we make no warranty or guarantee as to the completeness or accuracy of said information.
Right. So just ask yourself, listener, when was the last time you deemed a source anything? You should.
Oh, I think
we all need to be out deeming.
I think they do that. They redeem some things, too,
mm-hmm.
which is to deem twice. And I'm sure there's a lot. Oh, yes, we do not pay for this radio program. This is not an infomercial. We do advertise on KTEM for the radio program.
Yep.
But KTEM doesn't pay us to produce this radio program.
This is a totally volunteer thing. How's that for weird?
It's a public circus.
Yeah, it's definitely a public circus. That's for sure.
And you can contact us by sending us an email. We have our email open. Unfortunately, I am occupying the only inbound line to KTEM, and so you can't call in. But you can email us at either jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, and we will endeavor to respond to your email messages.
Yes, and I will have to say this. Usually there are multiple production producer folks running around the studio on a Saturday morning. There's not a lot of room to run around in here, so they more shuffle around each other. But for the last several weeks, I've been in here totally alone. So, It is appropriate to be speaking about business recoveries and that sort of thing in the middle of this, and it's probably very appropriate to be speaking from the KTEM studio on the subject. Okay, so what do you have to talk about today? We've got, you want to go over the newsletter and goodies
of
the market?
Let's go over the female mark.
The Marquette.
The Marquette. It's kind of like the Rockettes.
Yes, which are female rocks.
If you actually followed the market news this week and you listened to the pundits and the famous hedge fund managers and shrieking about how the market is vastly, hugely overpriced, and if you followed through the rest of the negative information, you would conclude that we should have had a market crash this week. And indeed, it was down 2.26 for the week, 2.26%.
The S&P,
The S&P 500 was down 2.26%. But the last 2 days of the week, when the pundits were frothing the frothiest,
yes,
the market started rising again. And I think a lot of the stability in the market that we've seen is largely from individual investors. I just read a survey that indicated in the month of April, 97% of 401k owners made no changes.
Yeah, and that's from Morningstar as well.
Right, the 3% who did mostly bought more. They became more aggressive.
And that's following a 3 months before that of only 5.4% of people having touched their allocation at all in that 3 month period. So for 401ks, what that says is that the big market movement was not due to your typical 401k investor. It was the big boys.
And
girls.
The market, the S&P 500, is still down 11.36% from the beginning of the year and about 15% from the top in February. But the big number, and this is the one that makes this different, makes this particular bear market a unique Ursine species, is it's up 28% from its bottom in late March. In other words, we had the top go to the bottom, about a 34% drop if you go to the close. If you go intraday, it was at 37 at one point. In a month. And then from there, it has been climbing and finally is stabilized down about 11% for the year, about 15% from the top. And when you look at the total economy and the likely damage that's going to be still around to publicly traded companies, when we get a vaccine and this crisis ends, it's probably around 11 to 15%. In other words, the stock market is doing a truly admirable job of being rational and saying, when the dust settles on this next year, the economy will probably have shrunk about 11 to 15%.
Mm-hmm.
The corporate economy in the United States, and then from there it's likely to build. In other words, the people who are investing, the people who are staying investing, said, yeah, sure, things are really bad right now, and they're not going to be really, really good when we recover from this because there's going to be a lot of damage.
Let me throw something out
here. But this is a bargain market is what they're saying.
Yeah, let me throw this out there. It isn't that the economy has shrunk that much. In fact, that would be absurd to think that it would shrink. The entire economy of the United States, even during the Great Depression, didn't shrink that much. The output of the economy is what we're talking about with the GDP. What we make. The economy itself, what we own, the machines that make the thing that cause the GDP, isn't shrinking. The valuation on it's moving around a little bit. But the GDP, that's the profitability of the United States as a whole. And the profitability of the United States as a whole has moved backwards. A lot of people are losing money. So there's some degree of shrinkage in the actual economy of businesses that are closing up. But the value of those businesses, while that might shrink, if someone else buys the business, it's maintained. If someone else buys the infrastructure of the business, the building, the location, that's not going away. So when we're talking about shrinking economy, we have to be really careful to so people aren't looking around and saying, how is it that the things are shrinking when, you know, when you're driving around, there's less traffic, but there's the same number of buildings. There's the same number of cars. There's the same number of computers. It's not like we're actively throwing buildings in the trash. So when we're talking about GDP shrinkage, this is an important thing. It's a really nice baseline to have. And the hardest people to teach that to are econ undergrads. So I think the general public has a better potential of understanding that, that the overall economy is not measured in GDP. GDP measures the output of that economy. Okay, now back to you. Sorry about the interruption, but I think it was important.
That's a good point. It's really the valuation. But when the market is measuring future valuations of the publicly traded stocks and thereby the publicly traded corporations in the United States, and it measures the total of the whole thing, and it's the estimate of – it's a mass estimate. It's a large group of people who are committing their money to saying, here's what we think it's worth, but not here's what we think it's worth today.
Right.
Here's what we think it's going to be worth in about a year. Now, if we get really – if we're serious about it, since most of the people who are invested in the market are long-term investors, they really should be looking a little further out, and they appear to be doing so. In other words, to own stocks today, and I don't mean own individual stocks, although there's a lot of that goes on. To be invested in the stock market today is to say, I think the total value measured by the earnings of the companies that are out there that are represented in the United States stock market are going to be more in the future than they are according to what the market is today. If everybody thought, hey, these companies are going to be worth 30% less a year from now, then the market would drop 30%. Now, it can drop 30% without meaning that, because sometimes there's just a lot of panicked craziness goes on in the market. But when it stabilizes for a long period of time, as it has since the bottom that it hit back in March, that is an indication that the consensus of the people who invest is that here's what the corporate economy that's publicly traded is worth if we were to buy all these companies. And I think, based on all the economics I know, which is not as much as I wish I knew, but probably more than I could know.
Which says that you're probably an expert, because the people that believe themselves to be experts don't wish to learn anymore. They already know enough. And the people that are real experts are saying, man, I wish I knew more about this stuff.
Basically, we're saying that we think the United States economy is going to be worth more in the future than it is today. And it's going to be worth more in a year than it is today. Meaning the corporate economy.
Right. And when I talk to average, and it's not like I speak to an average person, my average...
You know her?
I don't. She's very forgettable. The entirety of the people that I've talked to, I haven't had anybody, when I speak to them and I ask them, do you think in a year that the United States is still going to be in a position where we're unable to do anything? And in 2 years, do you think we're going to be in total lockdown still? And I'm getting unanimously from that, no, we're not going to be, in 2 years, we're not going to be locked down. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means that the economy is going to look better than it is now. And I think one really, really important concept here is that the United States economy has started to open back up. Well, what does that mean? Is it, it's, you know, there's a lot of conversation about the dangerousness of doing it too early and so on. So let's put that question aside, that part about how dangerous is it. Let's put it aside for a second and just look at the economic numbers about, you know, 1918. They did not shut down the entire economy. We had a lot of deaths. But we didn't have any ability to vaccinate back then. We didn't have a vaccine. We still don't have a vaccine for the Spanish flu. So that concept of it's like this other time, we have to throw that out the window too. There's similarities, but there's big differences. We semi-voluntarily, and when I say semi-voluntarily, it was patchwork. The United States president did not say everyone shut down. He issued suggestions. Then at the state and the county and the village and the city level, mayors and judges and commissioners and bureaucrats that we've elected at the local level across the United States made decisions. And by and large, that meant shut down businesses that are not considered essential. So across the country, we shut down. That didn't happen in 1918. Well, we've begun to open back up. So just the same way as it should be no surprise that we had these big unemployment numbers, those are things that we should have expected when we shut down businesses. And for the most part, the markets reacted as if those have been expected numbers. Do you agree with that much so far?
I agree completely. We got a question, by the way.
Okay, so let me wrap this part up here. That means that we're still going to get more bad news from total shutdown state. But we're already transitioning up to a different state, slowly transitioning up into a more open state. The question about health has to come back in to the equation at some point. But what we can say is that once we start opening back up, it's unlikely that we go back to total lockdown mode. It's too chaotic in the United States to do that easily. Singapore can do it. Just one person says, let's do it. They do it. Denmark's the same way. To some extent, South Korea is that way. The United States is not. We've demonstrated too now that we move together only chaotically. This is herding cats, not blowing a whistle and pointing in a direction. So the cats have kind of left the boundaries, which means economic numbers are going to start upward. Now, that's not a guess. When you open the economy from a shutdown state, you're still going to get numbers from the shutdown. So expect we may see more numbers coming up next week on Thursday. We may see some more unemployment numbers really rocket. But the reality is that that's a lagging indicator. These are businesses that have delayed and delayed the layoff. They've tried to grab whatever they can to keep from laying people off, but at some point they've got to lay people off. Okay, so
Moody's is saying at this point that the bottom will probably be around Memorial Day.
Did you say Moody's?
Moody's Economics.
Okay. When you said Moody's, it's kind of blurred all together. I think it was a microphone thing.
And I think that's probably true. Sometime around the end of this month will be the bottom point in the economy, which means when May's numbers come out in June, they're going to look pretty bad.
Yeah. So we're still expecting bad news next month about stuff that's already happened now. So as long as we can expect the market to understand, to continue to understand that that will be happening, even though the recovery, as far as economic terms go, the recovery's actually started. That's weird that we can say the recovery has started. Businesses have started to reopen. They're not doing it all at once, and the ones that are doing it are not having extreme successes very often, but it's more than nothing. So what we can say is that in July, I expect to see some positive numbers creeping into the statistics, maybe even in June. But these are lagging positive numbers, and they're not full recovery. What we were trying to say, though, is that I believe that we've bottomed economically. Moody's is saying, what is it, Monday? Monday's the bottom?
Well, whenever sometime towards the end of this month, we'll actually see. When we look back, we'll see the bottom in economic activity, and from there it'll start to rise.
Yeah. So that concept of whether we bottomed already or we're going to bottom in a week or two, the reality is that as soon as the economy begins to open back up, that's going to be positive numbers for the economy. The other question about is it healthy? Is it a good idea to do this? Will this long-term slow the economy back down? As long as we're careful about this, You know, we don't have enough tests. We don't. You can go down all the negatives, but as long as we try to maintain social distancing as much as we can, Texas is going to be one of the best places for the experiment to go. Because we haven't peaked yet. We're still on an upward inclined infection rate. It takes longer to get to us, and it takes longer to spread around because we're more spread out as a state. Dallas is seeing pretty substantial rises in their infection rate. Houston is still seeing substantial rises in their infection rate. A slow reopening may look a lot more like Sweden, which is to say slightly more economic activity, but most people are not going to volunteer to go out and get sick, especially if they start to know people who have gotten sick. Right now, one of the big limiting factors on carefulness is that most people in Texas don't know anyone that has been infected at this point. So that's it. You go to the question. I think we've got more to talk on that subject, but the question's good.
Well, the question is, if the U.S. went negative on the rates, how would it affect global demand for Treasury securities, from John? If the U.S. went negative on its rates, it still wouldn't be as negative as other places, and it still would be the most stable economy in the United States, so I don't know that it would have a tremendous effect. Yeah. However, if people did start to say, okay, well, since it's negative, I'm not going to buy as many, that would immediately cause the interest rates to go back up. And as people stop buying treasuries, the interest rates would start back up and we get into positive rates and they start buying them again.
Yeah.
But the important thing is to recognize that I don't think we're going to go to negative interest rates. The Fed has said so. Chairman Powell has said so. And I think it would be at present, short of some catastrophe that I can't even imagine at this point, going to negative rates would be a terrible idea. And I want to tell you why. Several reasons. One, it would put tremendous stress on the banking system.
Yeah.
One of the reasons, in the opinion of several well thought out pieces I've read from economists, that Europe never really recovered from the 2008 financial crisis is because they allowed in negative interest rates.
Right.
And they've used negative interest rates. Negative interest rates are a disincentive to do a lot of things more than they are an incentive to do something. The theory behind negative interest rates is if the banks, when they deposit money at the Federal Reserve, have to pay the Federal Reserve to deposit the money, they'll be more eager to loan money. No, actually, and what is shown in Europe is, no, that didn't work real well.
Yeah.
And this makes people very afraid. And one other big thing that I want to hit, and I'll pass to you. We have something going on in the United States that there's less of by far in Europe, and that is the use of money market funds and the use of Treasury money market funds. And if the short-term Treasuries went negative, how long are you actually going to leave your money in a Treasury money market fund or in any other money market fund if you're having to pay them to leave the money there? That doesn't make any sense. And it would cause a tremendous disruption and tremendous turbulence in the financial system in the United States with unpredictable results. We are not Europe.
No.
And we don't want to be Europe.
Throw some European numbers out. The German GDP was announced this week. They are in full-blown recession. And usually I wouldn't say that with one quarter's data, because you know we're not in an official recession yet in the United States, even with a negative GDP. The reason is because officially it takes two quarters next to each other, or one quarter with a quarter in between. Three of the five last quarters for Germany have been negative. Well before coronavirus, they've been teetering. I would say without any degree of hold back on this, Germany is in a full-blown recession, even officially. If we use the same official methodology as was used during the Great Recession, Germany's in one. And Germany is the powerhouse of Europe. They have been teetering on the edge. The last quarter of the third quarter of 2019, they had 0.2%. The First quarter of 2020, they had negative 2.2%. So
let me correct you.
The fourth quarter of what are you going to correct on? I said the third quarter of last year, the first quarter of this year. What are you going to correct on?
The Wall Street Journal just reported on May 15th yesterday, that Germany's gross domestic product shrank by 8.6% in the first quarter. Now, I guess that's an annualized.
That's
rate.
Annualized.
You're right.
Yeah, so
yeah, you're
2.2% is that the Germans don't do the annualized thing.
Are you right? You're right. You're correct. I'm incorrect here.
Right. So when we look back quarters, three of the last five have been negative. That's anybody could easily say that that is a recession. And it's a recession that's been exacerbated by a virus. Where we've been, maybe we'll have a recession this year, maybe we'll have a recession next year, things are at full capacity and going well. Well, now we're going to be having a recession, but we were at full steam before the recession. Well, Europe was at some kind of sputtering idle before going backwards. So there's some differences there. Anyway, back to you. I just wanted to throw that out on the European things, that they have literally been hanging on to the recession since 2009, just kind of peeking out of it every once in a while.
And when you look at the southern tier of European states, the rate at which their economy has declined in the first quarter, annualized rates of 21%, 17%, 18%, 19% for France, Italy, and Spain. There's a real, it's something I want to talk about probably later in the show, is the fact that combined the difference in the northern Germany, and northern Europe and southern Europe, the way their economies are performing, and is a serious division within the Eurozone and within the European Union. And one of the things I'd like to talk about is the German High Court overruling or saying they have overruled the European Central Bank's desire to transfer money basically from the northern tier of countries to the southern tier of countries to keep them afloat. They said it's unconstitutional under the German Constitution, which could be the first signal that the European Union is going to break up. That would be a major result of the coronavirus.
Right.
We've been saying a long time that without a constitution, without a strong central government, European Union is just an experiment that is likely to fail at some point.
Yeah, it's an aggregate with no glue. There's nothing holding it there except that it's not being vibrated around. It's now being vibrated around. Those countries are moving apart from each other, not toward each other. On that subject, the Brexit negotiations, the last round of them for currently, the next one starts in the middle of June, ended with zero movement forward, no trade deal. Brussels is under the impression that the UK needs to sign off on every single environmental and other issue that the European Union already embraces. The UK is saying, wait a minute, you didn't make Canada do this. You didn't make Brazil do this. Why are you making us do it? And Brussels is coming back, well, Canada and Brazil are not our next door neighbors. So it's an up-in-the-air thing as to what kind of deal they're going to have at the end of the year when they are no longer with a deal. We haven't been negotiating very strongly with the UK. It's just not happened. We've kind of shrugged our shoulders about it, but at the end of the year, they need a trade agreement with us. Not necessarily a free trade, just a trade agreement. They don't have one right now. And that's something that has kind of fallen off of our administration's priority list when just a year or two ago he was excitedly talking about making a really good deal for the United States with the UK. Obviously, there's something else on his mind right now.
And I really think this crisis could result in the European Union and the euro breaking up.
I agree.
I haven't seen the big cracks appearing yet. But this German High Court decision basically says the fact that the European Central Bank is sending more money to the southern tier of countries who are in economic distress, Italy, Spain, and by the way, the places where the coronavirus has been the worst, and basically transferring money from wealthy countries to poor countries is against the German Constitution. And it is a battle cranking up right now as to say whether which constitution will be followed, whether the Europe, which they don't have a constitution of the European Union. They have basically a series of common law court decisions and a bunch of bureaucratic decisions. And if the Germans and the European Union, the Germans are the biggest component in the European Union, and if they say we're not playing anymore, that is a strong indication that the European Union is not going to last. And that'll be a big deal. And what the European Union would do about it if Germany said, stick in your ear, we're going to remain a member, but we're not going to participate. That, just like the shutting down of borders between the various European countries, which is still in a place in most of Europe.
Yeah, Denmark is allowing no one in or out. Big chunks of France are doing the same thing. Italy is sort of doing that, but they're not really good at controlling any of their borders. So
that's generally true about Italy. They're not generally good at controlling.
Yeah, they are free spirits.
And they enjoy that. Well, let's talk about the market a little bit more. The U.S. Treasury 10-year T-note is still astonishing to me. It's yielding 0.642%. In other words, if you loan money to the United States Treasury for 10 years, they'll be glad to pay you 0.642% a year, which is pretty astonishing. It's far lower than what we would have expected out of a Treasury bill or a money market fund at the beginning of this year. T-bills, mentioning T-bills, they're paying 0.109% annualized. Now, in other words, you only get a quarter of that. You get four one-hundredths of 1% if you buy a T-bill, which loans the government money for 90 days. But the good news is the T-bill yield is way below the 10-year yield, which means we have a positive yield curve.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. The other thing that happened that was a little bit surprising in the market, if you recall, a couple of weeks ago, oil was trading in negative numbers. West Texas Intermediate Oil was trading in negative numbers because they couldn't find any place to store it, and people were having to pay somebody to take the oil off their hands. And it's up to $29.35 a barrel at the end of this week, which is just amazingly 20% rise for the week and a much bigger rise last week. And basically, this is American entrepreneurship writ large, because people, once they realized they had the ability to buy oil, in some cases at a dollar a barrel, and the entrepreneurs jumped in and said, we think this thing is going to go to $30 a barrel, and it's right there in the future contract, they thought it was. And they bought, the people who could buy it for a dollar a barrel were buying it and then figuring out some really interesting and innovative places to put the oil.
This is a really good innovative place to put barrels. We haven't done this in decades.
In barrels.
Yeah.
Yes.
We've been measuring in barrels for a long, long time without using any barrels. Well, we're using barrels again.
Well, apparently somebody bought a host, I don't know how many, because there are a lot of them in the picture, of tanks that are designed to go on flatbed trailers. They're designed to go on the same kind of trailer that hauls a container around with their oil. And he bought a lot of them, lined them all up, and filled them up with oil. Other places, they bought bladders and put them in warehouses.
Pig bladders?
Filled them up with oil. Well, actually, bigger than pig bladders.
Okay.
Big fuel bladders.
Big bags, basically.
Yeah, big bags, and they filled them up with oil. And other places, they filled pipelines that weren't pumping anything because, obviously, there's not a lot of oil being used. So they filled them up with oil, bought the oil, and filled them up and let it set there. In other words, one of the wonderful things about the American economy is, given the opportunity to make some money, people will come up with some really innovative ways to do it, sometimes innovative and stupid, and sometimes innovative and brilliant, but we come up with some way to get the job done, and we did it. I'm sure the EPA is having fits over the places that oil is being stored that they haven't approved, but it worked. And so the oil moved up to $29.35. And one of the reasons it moved up is because of what Jake was talking about. The economy is starting its recovery. And all you have to do during the week is listen to I-35. We live close enough to I-35, and our offices are on I-35, so that we can hear the traffic noise. Yeah. During the shutdown, it was amazingly quiet. It is no longer quiet during the week. Now, on the weekends, it gets pretty darn quiet. I don't think we have a lot of tourist traffic running around. We don't have a lot of people driving around recreationally, but the trucks pick up during the week pretty dramatically.
This is
used to be pretty steady.
There's some interesting anecdotal numbers and some non-anecdotal numbers. The hotel occupancy rate dropped drastically from March and April. And some of those hotels started opening up last weekend and the weekend before, and we've seen the occupancy rate jump, but from zero, anything is a jump. So it's up a little bit. What's fascinating and humorous to me is that a great deal of that occupancy was not out-of-town travelers. It was people that lived in the same town or city as the hotel, getting a room in the hotel to get out of the house.
Yeah, we just saw that happen with in our family, where one of the members of our family took his family and actually got a one of the members, you might want to say who it is if you want to, got a room at the Stagecoach Inn so they could use the swimming pool.
Yeah, that was us. It was me.
And apparently it's like a lot of other things that we do. We think it's our original idea and what a brilliant thing, and we'll do it, and we discover it's going on across the economy.
Right, and not only, I mean, the first weekend, we were the only only room used in the whole place.
So you say the service is pretty good?
I would say we didn't have any service, actually. We talked to the people at the front, and there was nobody there. We cleaned up after ourselves. The social distancing was not a problem. We had an entire pool to ourselves. It was chlorinated. I had a resort to myself 2 weekends ago.
So you had your own private swimming pool.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. And if I would say if anybody has the opportunity to have a whole resort to themselves for a weekend, they should take it. It was quite pleasant. I think that that the fact that that's happening across the country, that where places are opening up, people are saying, all right, I'm not willing to travel 4 hours to a place and possibly get sick, but I'll sure go down to the local hotel and stay there. And we're seeing that happen. It's really weird. There's a lot of stuff that we don't have records of ever happening before. It doesn't mean it hasn't happened at some point in past that we just haven't recorded, but it's fascinating stuff.
And you know what else is fascinating?
What's that? Commercials.
It's time to do commercials
or PSAs, as the case may be. So we will be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you would like to join the conversation, our email addresses are jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, and we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.